You are listening to the Horse Radio Network, part of the Equine Network family.
What a beautiful day for horses in the morning.
You are listening to the number one horse podcast in the world. Here's your entertaining look at the horse world and the people in it.
Good Wednesday morning. I am Glenda Geek in Ocala, Florida.
And I'm Jamie Jennings in Norman, Oklahoma. You're listening to Horses in the Morning on the Horse Radio Network for Wednesday, April 8th, episode 3922, brought to you today by Chewy. Good morning, horse people.
Well, we have a fun show planned for you today. We have two returning guests today, author Mark Schrager.
You ever say we have like a really boring show planned for you today? It's going to suck.
No, because we wouldn't do it if it was boring. Mark Schrager is going to join us. He's going to talk to us about his new book, The First Kentucky Derby, 13 Black Jockeys, One Shady Owner, and The Little Red Horse That Wasn't Supposed to Win. And Auditor Richard's going to fill us in on the signing up for the new or for the HRN Virtual Tevis team for 2026. We might have won last year. Did I mention that?
We're defending champions.
That's right. This Day in Equine News gives us a rundown on the history of the FEI World Cup, which happens this weekend. And do we have any weird news?
Yeah. We might actually visit Florida. At least once.
Yeah, big surprise. And we'll have a post show for you as well, auditors. Well, Jamie, we've talked about this recently. WKRP in Cincinnati. We talked about the TV show, and you were in radio. This has nothing to do with horses, by the way, but you were in radio. Kind of what we do here is, is modeled after radio. WKRP was one of my favorite shows. And there's big news. I didn't realize that the call letters WKRP have been used by a little station in Raleigh for years. Raleigh, North Carolina. Well, after nearly 50 years... it's coming to Ohio. D.P. McIntyre, director of the media nonprofit Oak City Media, has confirmed that a deal is finalized to transfer the legendary call letters WKRP to Cincinnati. So it's going to be a Cincinnati station. They haven't gone public with which one it is yet or what their identity is yet, but it is going to be going to Cincinnati for the first time. So
can I just, you cannot talk about that without me hearing, I'm at WKRP in Cincinnati.
I probably could have played that without a rights violation because it's so old. But the new station manager has confirmed that there's a strict no turkeys via helicopter policy. So I made that up. But that would be a good promo the first day. Anyway, yeah, so that's the big news there.
Baby, you and me were never meant to be.
Is that why you got into radio with WKRP?
Do you know what's really, this seems weird, but I worked at WSTR, Star 94, my first like big station I worked for in Atlanta. And actually WKRP was actually modeled after WSTR.
Sounds
weird. Yeah. And so the main DJ that was on there, they actually named it after, they based it off of a guy named Skinny Bobby Harper.
And what is he, drunk Skinny and Bobby stoned Harper. The entire time?
I'm pretty sure he was. Yeah. Yeah. So whenever I worked at Star 94, they were like, this is the station that WKRP was modeled after. So it's like real special to me.
Was there a blonde bombshell sitting at the front desk?
You know, modeled after them, not when I was working there. So, I mean, I was the brunette bombshell. What?
Anyway, I had to bring that up because I knew it was special for you, too. Reminder about programming this weekend. We'll have three special Equine Affair episodes, Friday, Saturday, and Sunday. This is Jamie and I's last day this week. Friday, Saturday, and Sunday will be Ashley and Allison hosting from Equine Affair, live from there. They always get fun interviews. It's a lot of fun. I will not be there this year, as you know, but Ashley is taking the reins, so to speak, and they're doing the meetup on Friday night at the Cheesecake Factory as well, and I know some of you have signed up for that, and she's looking forward to meeting everybody. It's time for some Daily Whinnies.
From the podcast to the barn, here's some hidden birthday wishes to keep you warm.
Happy birthday. We only have one, and I looked for the entire weekend because I don't want to get yelled at by auditors. I looked for the entire weekend till we're back on Monday.
It's a good one.
And there's one, but it's a very special one, isn't it? Do you want to give this? I think you should give this one, actually.
Oh, happy birthday, Debbie Laux. Yes, Debbie, who runs Flags Up, daughter of Monty Roberts. She is
Horsemanship Radio.
Horsemanship Radio host, and she's delightful and just one of the nicest people you'd ever want to meet. So happy birthday, Debbie.
Happy birthday, Debbie. You look terrific, by the way.
Why don't you do the next one then? You get to do the one I was going to do.
Okay.
For Shelley.
Congrats to Auditor Shelley on her new 14-year-old grade gelding, 14-3 hands, named 8-Ball, which, by the way, is a great name for a horse. He's completely black. That's why I got the name 8-Ball, but he has a little bit of white in his face. So it's a perfect name. It fits perfectly. And apparently, that'll be her new trail riding buddy.
Now you got to get a white horse and name it Q-Ball.
And then you'll have a set. There you go. And then a green one and a red one.
Yeah. So, I also have another Daily Whitney that I'd like to give out because I wanted to talk about something that was like, okay, sometimes we do things for this podcast to entertain you. And then there's times where we do things to entertain us. And that is what I did yesterday. And I hopefully all of you guys will really think it's fascinating. But I got to sit down and talk to a guy as a journalist named Steve Haskin. And I have read Steve Haskin's articles for 20 plus years. He always used to write the last page in the Blood Horse, and he's just very chatty and very like conversational in the way that he writes. And he's obsessed with racehorses, and that's what he does, is he writes about racehorses. And I've read him forever, and he has some books, and we've had him on the show before to talk about the book he wrote about Kelso, which I had on my shelf, which is crazy. So anyway, just fascinating. He just turned 80 years old, and I got to sit with him yesterday for an hour and talk to him about all things racehorses. And he is the consummate storyteller, just incredible. And when is it going to come out, Glenn?
That'll be one of the one-on-one episodes we do while we're off in May for the cruise and conferences and stuff. So we're trying to get all new episodes for you in May so that there won't be any best ofs. That's the goal. And we've both done a couple now, but I sat in on, it was so fun listening to you because I just recorded it yesterday while you two went one-on-one. And it was two nerds geeking out. It really, it's two racing nerds geeking out. I didn't realize, what surprised me was not Steve. His stories are unbelievable. And this ran a little longer. And I decided last night, by the way, you and I talked about it. This ran a little longer because Steve has stories after, he has hung out with everybody that are legends in racing and celebrities. I mean, he's just hung out. He is the quintessential. When you see in the old movies, the reporter dude that's covering racing at the racetrack, that's what Steve is. He is that guy.
With a little card in it.
Yes, yes. He's that guy. And his stories are fascinating. So I decided last night, I'm going to leave the whole interview. We're not going to cut anything out. Because if people want to listen, they can listen. It was just fascinating. And, you know, he is getting up there. It was so fun to have that interview. And he was so gracious. He talked to Jamie for 20 minutes after the interview.
Yeah.
I mean, he was such a cool dude. And I think you're going to enjoy that. We have some really special one-on-ones planned for you in May.
So what surprised you? You just said something surprised you.
It's how much you know about racing. I knew you know some, but you were hanging out with a guy who knows everything about race. I mean, literally, he's met all of these horses that have been famous since the 60s. He's met them all. And
I just try not to embarrass myself.
You hung in there with him. I got to tell you, I kept going, hey, she knows a lot more than I thought. I thought she was just casual, you know, but
you guys,
not.
I mean, the way that I contain myself, you know, you do the horses in history and you mention a horse from 1935 and I have an opinion.
But but we also have had over the years on this show our concerns about racing, and you're not, you don't hold back on your concerns about racing either. So I guess that's what kind of surprised me, you know. I guess you can love something and still try and make it better from you know, by being who we are, right?
Well, people always ask me, like, how do you like horse racing? I'm like, because of horse racing, I have been able to acquire the most unbelievably athletic, wonderful horses when they're too slow. So I wouldn't have half my horses.
And I've told you that I was, you know, people expected me, being a greyhound owner, many of them over the years, that I would have been happy when they got rid of greyhound racing in most of the country now. And I was not. because they're, you know, it's just like anything else. It's just like dressage and jumping and whatever. You know, every Western sport or English sport out there, there's good and bad in every sport. There just is. There were a lot of good trainers, and we got one of the dogs from one of the most special trainers I ever saw in my life. We actually went to a dog, we went to a greyhound meetup where there was 400 greyhounds. It was the most greyhounds I've ever seen in one place. And this trainer, who this dog hadn't seen in years, she saw that trainer, and our dog literally ripped the lead out of my hands and ran over to this trainer, jumped up. Never jumped up on us, jumped up on, you know, feet on the shoulders and kissed her face. So that's a dog that was not treated badly, right? I mean, you know, so there's good and bad in everything. And, you know, we can try it. We can try and shut it down, or you can try and make it better. And it's always been our theory that we need to try and make these things better. And that includes all the disciplines, you know.
Well, I've been obsessed since I was a kid. You know, and it, Walter Farley, it's all his fault.
So I think you're going to enjoy the one-on-ones. I had an excellent one-on-one. I'll tease another one I did. I had an excellent one-on-one with somebody that longtime listeners will remember from back. I mean, I interviewed him first time 18 years ago. And it's a photographer named Scott Trees. He changed how photography is done in the horse world. Before he came along, pictures of horses were how you picture them in the old pictures. They stood them sideways. You took a picture of them sideways with somebody holding a lead. That was it. That's the only pictures of horses until he came along.
You can go on Craigslist and see lots of butt shots of quarter horses.
Yes, that's right. He was the first one to take the action photos of horses for magazines. And we're talking way back. And he traveled the world. He photographed the Sultan's palace. You know, it was just amazing stories. The cool thing about what we're doing with the one-on-ones is these people have stories they've never told before. And they're telling them to us, Coffin one, you know?
Oh, yeah, that's so cool. And well, this one too, like Steve started talking and he started talking about, like, he was born in Brooklyn and worked at a printing press. And I've never read these stories anywhere. So it was so interesting to hear him tell these stories. And you're like, wait, I've never heard that before. And he's very transparent. Part of the thing about him talking to him is when you do some research on him, you got 9 billion pages of Google to go through because he's written more stuff than you could ever imagine. So anyway, it was really, really
like,
cool.
And like the two of us who talk about everything we've ever done for the last 18 years, 15 years.
Yeah, yeah. It's exhausting.
do you have your clinic this year, by the way?
I am going to have my clinic. Okay. It's the Monty Roberts intro course, and you can take this clinic at his place or you can take it at mine. I'm certified to teach the clinic. And basically, it's October 5th through the 16th this year, and we will have it covered. Booyah, a little bougie. But it's a clinic about, you know, communication, developing a nonviolent partnership, timing, consistency. You learn how horses think. It's like classroom hours and then practical time with a bunch of different horses, join up, long lining, trailer loading, all of those things. And so I would love to have some people.
And it's restricted. You only take how many?
4 to 6.
Okay, so it's small. You got to sign up early because a lot of listeners have done this over the years.
Oh, yes, and they're all like forever friends now.
So. Yeah, well, you spend that long a time together. You're going to be or you're not going to be, one of the two. But October, how do they sign up? What do they do?
Just email me or jamie@horseradionetwork.com, or you can go on my Flyover Farm Jamie Jennings Facebook page and send me a message and we'll chat about it and get it all sorted out.
All right, good. And, you know,
two spots are full, so
two already? Okay.
Yeah.
So, and as far as accommodations, all that, you just work it out with them. You just talk to everybody.
We'll work it out. Either you can slum it in a twin bed at like a summer camp in a room and share it with 4 other girls, or you can get a hotel.
You're not too far out of a place where there's actual hotels.
Actually, you get to live in Ginger's house, but you have to sleep in a room on a single bed with a bunch of people. But it's friends. You make friends with everybody.
Yeah, you really do.
So it's cool. It's like summer camp for adults.
And then you get to ask Ginger all the good Jamie stories.
No. She doesn't say a word. She's going to be gone.
Chewy is everything you need to get your barn ready for spring. Whether you're battling mud, upgrading your grooming supplies, or stocking up on electrolytes and ulcer guard for the unpredictable weather. And boy, It is unpredictable. Chewy delivers what you need right when you need it. Stay on track with vaccines, dewormers, and daily supplements with all the trusted brands and convenience of AutoShip. Plus, enjoy free shipping on all orders over $49. It's never been simpler to keep your horse happy and healthy. Start your spring restock today at chewy.com/equine. You know, Jennifer thinks she gets away with this, but you know, when she's supposed to be in there working on shows, I walk in and she changes the screen immediately. And you know, I know it's not porn. So what I do know is it's horse porn, because she used to be on the Dover site. Dover was her go-to. Dover was everybody's go-to back in the day. And it's not that anymore. She's on the Chewy site. And just shopping endlessly on the Chewy site. So
we're just browsing, Glenn. Gosh, let it go.
I finally told her the other day, you do not have to hide it every time I come in the room.
Like, we're just doing research.
I just thought it was funny that she hides it. But I'm sure she's not the only one that hides it when the husband walks in either. We're not the only ones. Anyway.
I watched a video and it was a guy, and it was a delivery guy, and he walks up to the door and knocks on the door and he's like, hey, and he's clearly bringing golf clubs. Like, it's like a tailor-made box that is about the shape of golf.
And
he was like, hey, what are you doing? Didn't you read it? Midnight, after midnight at the back door. And he was like, sure, we don't deliver at midnight. Well, you're gonna use it. He's like, yeah, honey, I don't know. They got the wrong house. Talking to him. Yeah, that's my husband. That's, but you know what? Turnabout's fair play. There you go.
The golf clubs would be easier than a horse showing up in a horse trailer. That would be easier to hide.
Unless you get the same color as what you already have.
Well, we welcome back to the show the amazing author, Mark Schrager. We had him on before discussing his Man of War book, and now he's here with a brand new book called The First Kentucky Derby, 13 Black Jockeys, One Shady Owner, and a Little Red Horse That Wasn't Supposed to Win. Mark, first of all, your titles are excellent because that makes me want to read this book.
Thank you.
It's perfect.
I hope others have the same idea.
Yeah, it's perfect. So where did the fascination for this race come from?
Well, I've got a fascination for racing history in general. And I had never seen anything written about the first Derby and earlier races. You read about them and you read things that can't possibly be true, like horses being started in two ranks where you've got, you know, a 10 foot gap between the first horses and the second horses. I've seen stories about racetracks that the horses have to jump over a stream that's going through it and I just wanted to see what odd things there were about the first Kentucky Derby and how it came together. You know, you see it today and the race is very packaged and very, I don't know. It's out there and it's very, I don't know, very well put together. And it wasn't that way 150 years ago. It was a race that was run for the first time. And you know, they had an idea of what they were doing, but they had a lot to learn. And I wanted to see how the race had evolved from where it started off to where it is now.
Well, you talk about how it was unorganized. How on earth do you find all the historical facts for this book?
Well, fortunately, there's a lot of places you can go to get them. The Keeneland Library is an incredible resource in Kentucky. And I talk about, I think, in my acknowledgments how much I love librarians, and they're absolutely the best. They know every book they have, every newspaper they have, and you can tell them, I want this and this and this, and I need to know this, and sure, we got that, and they'll bring it out for you. So there's that. Newspapers.com is an excellent resource. I read, you can't believe the number of articles I read about the various individuals involved in the race, about literally you could read day by day in the Louisville Courier Journal and some of the other newspapers how the track was coming together, how on the day of the race they were still pounding nails into the structure, you know, hoping it wouldn't fall down in the middle of the day. And there's a fair amount, a lot of books about the Kentucky Derby. I mean, you know, good luck finding a whole bunch about the Preakness, but the Kentucky Derby, there are books galore. The hard part really is finding the time to read them all and assimilate everything.
That's what I was thinking. I was like, I'm just going to read your book and let you do all the work because that seems like a lot to go through. And there's no Preakness information because I'm pretty sure everybody involved with the Preakness from day one has been drunk.
Well, I don't know. I can't actually, you know, prove that. Part of the trouble with the Preakness, of course, is that the track burned down at one point. And took a lot of their memorabilia with it, so they have a disadvantage compared to Churchill Downs, which is never burned.
Well, speaking of Churchill Downs, tell us about Churchill Downs. I mean, when was the first Kentucky Derby run? What year?
Well, it was run on May 17th, 1875, and so that's what 100. And I'm trying to do the math in my head, but. No, can't do it. But it's many, many years ago.
So what was it like in Churchill at that time? Because it looks different than it does now, I'm sure.
Well, it looks very different. The twin spires weren't built yet. They went up about 20 years later. There was a crowd of about 10,000. They called the horse. There were four races that day. Rather than the 13 or 14 you'll have nowadays. They didn't have that many horses, so they couldn't run that many races. But it was the third race of four, and they rang a gong to call the horses out to the track. There were bookies. There weren't, you know, ranks of pari-mutuel windows. There were bookies and pool sellers and people making individual bets with one another and trying to rip each other off, as was my shady owner, H. Price McGrath. Well, let's see. There were 15 horses in the race. 13 of them were ridden by black jockeys. Two fillies. There were two of the horses had never run before. They were making their first start. There was nothing like the business we have nowadays of the point system to get into the race. It was, if you wanted your horse in, he or she was in, and that was all there was to it. Just get him to the track and put him in the race. It was so catch as catch can that actually the program had originally been scheduled for three races, and on the morning of the Derby, they somehow magically pulled together a fourth race, and. You know, it was scheduled that day. I mean, that's pretty amazing.
You got these horses standing around in the back, aren't doing anything. Let's put them in a race.
They're like, just grab them. Tack them up. Bring them out.
Pretty much. I mean, you know, so suddenly they took away their hay and you know, they poured out some of their water. And the horse, I guess if you had a smart horse, they would realize, hey, I'm going to run today. I didn't expect that. And yeah, so but that was how it went. It was very catch as catch can. The Derby was set, and you know the first three races were set, but it was like anything could happen. People walked to Churchill Downs. It wasn't called Churchill Downs then, by the way. It was the Louisville Jockey Club, but people would start off at the crack of dawn and they would walk there and walk home, get home, you know, maybe at midnight. It was kind of crazy. It was nothing like today. The infield was full of horse carts. It was just very different.
Yeah, I mean, it would have to be. So your book focuses on kind of the role that black jockeys played at the time. What were some of the things that you learned that maybe even surprised you?
Well, I talk about this in the introduction a little bit. What I thought the book was going to be about was Aristides and the building of the track and how that all came together. And someone told me, you know, there were lots of black jockeys in the race that day. You should research that. And I hadn't known it, hadn't planned to do anything with the jockeys. You read articles about the Derby and you read about the owners and maybe somewhat the trainers, but you don't read much about the jockeys at all. But I started looking into it and I realized that there were 13 black jockeys. And I started looking at the history a little bit and learned that of the first 28 Kentucky Derbies running through, let's see, I've got a piece of paper with this on it. I'm gonna cheat.
Take your time.
Yeah. From 1875 through 1902, there were 28 Kentucky Derbies, and 15 of them were won by black jockeys. And that just struck me. I mean, I guess I can say this. I'm 77 years old, and I've been going to the races since I was 8. And I don't think I've seen 13 black jockeys in my lifetime. They're mm-hmm. just not there. And so I started wondering, where'd they go? How'd they get there? Where did they come from? Why did they leave? What happened? And that became almost a more interesting topic than talking about the Derby itself. And that was a bit of a problem because I had a book that was partly written already, and it was all about the first Kentucky Derby and how it was developed and how you know the person went to France and went to England and was trying to model everything after that. And all of a sudden I've got this sidetrack of black jockeys and where they came from and what happened to them. And it was a problem trying to pull the two stories together. And I think I did it okay. But it was like suddenly writing two books at the same time and trying to merge them into one.
So is this a book where, you know, it's more like fact-based, or is it told in the way of, okay, so like the book Black Beauty, he didn't pull that out, but the book is where they describe a lot of the factual, like, culture that was happening. It's also a fiction story, you know, there's a narrator in it. Is yours more of a fact-based book, or is there characters in it?
Well, I tried to make it as nonfiction as I could.
Okay.
And that was not always possible, and it wound up not being something I entirely wanted to do. So, for example, in one of the early chapters is about Aristides and his birth and the farm that he was raised on. The best information I could find about it was actually from a children's book, Kentucky Derby Winner, by, let's see, I've got her name somewhere on here, but it probably doesn't matter. Anyway, it's called Kentucky Derby Winner, and it's the only book I was able to find that actually talked about the birth of Aristides. And there are a lot of fictional characters in it and a lot of kind of nonsense in it, really. I mean, Henry Price McGrath was not a very nice man. He was kind of hard bitten, and he was a riverboat gambler type. But he's portrayed in Kentucky Derby Winner as a smiling, nice, wonderful man who sells off supposedly 1/10 of Aristides to a little boy who lives on his ranch, who I don't think ever really existed, but he sells it to him in exchange for a lock of Robert E. Lee's hair. If you've read anything about Price McGrath, that's not him.
So okay.
What he would do would be to take the hair and then refuse to give up the piece of the colt. So that part I had not much choice but to throw a little fiction into the nonfiction. But I tried to point out where I had done that. The other place. There's a chapter in there. Okay, we learned that Aristides won the Kentucky Derby, and that why he was the little red horse that wasn't supposed to win is that McGrath's money was on his other horse, Chesapeake, who was a son of Lexington and big and powerful and a huge horse who just sometimes didn't feel like running. And when he didn't feel like running, well, he didn't run. He'd barely pick up his feet. So McGrath made history. He's the first owner to ever own a Kentucky Derby winner, but it was the wrong horse, and he lost all his bets.
And he was about it too, wasn't he, from what I read?
He put on a good show of being mad about it, and people remarked about it. But I have a chapter in here where I descend into unreality asking, did he really lose? McGrath was a gambler. He was a very intelligent man. He knew how to play people. You know, a good gambler is a good psychologist, usually.
He was a shady owner, hence the title.
He was mostly making one-on-one bets with other owners. And you could just picture him going to whoever and saying, look at this horse. I'm so proud of him, this Chesapeake. He's huge. He's so big. He's powerful. He's the strongest horse on the ranch, and he is so primed for this race. But I'll tell you what, I'll give him to you at 8-5 odds, and I'll take my other horse, Aristides, just because he's mine. And he may have heard from his trainer. He could very well have. And Ansel Williamson was his trainer, a black trainer who himself had been trained on the plantations and knew everything there was to know about horses. And if Williamson had told him, hey, Aristides is really sharp, I think he's going to do it, McGrath would have been more than happy to follow that advice and mm-hmm. you know, dump his other horse on somebody who didn't know what he was doing. And, you know, as I say at the end of that chapter, could it have been that McGrath fixed the Derby and won the equivalent of millions of dollars making bets on Aristides? And my final sentence in there is, we'll never know.
Why do I have a Kenny Rogers in my head? You know, a certain song from Kenny Rogers.
You know, I thought about him when I was writing that.
I got to say, you know, when you watch the movie Seabiscuit, Samuel Riddle, the owner of War Admiral and previously Man of War, is portrayed as this, you know, really gruff, angry, sneaky, unlikable guy. But then you read Walter Farley's Man of War, and Samuel Riddle is this loving human. Is that kind of how the owner was portrayed in this book, or as portrayed through history, as like one or the other?
Well, very possibly. You know, again, it's a kid's book, so you're not really trying to scare them with an adult that is mean and angry and you know, doing the things a person like that would do. What I had always heard about Riddle, and I wrote about him a long time ago, was that he did have a gruff side, but that he also had a pleasant side. He gave to charity and he opened up his farm. He opened Faraway Farm after Man O' War was retired and welcomed 50,000 people, hired a groom who became almost more famous than Man O' War was. Mm-hmm. So he seems to have had his good side, where McGrath, you just don't see in his obituary. People have nice things to say about him, but in an obituary, they're going to do that.
Yeah.
For the most part, you read about him and he was pretty unlikable.
Okay, gotcha. All right, so mystery solved as far as Samuel Riddle goes. It could a little bit of both. We don't want to give everything away, because you can find this book. It's the first Kentucky Derby, 13 Black Jockeys, One Shady Owner, and the Little Red Horse That Wasn't Supposed to Win. It's on Kindle. It's hardback, soft cover. You've also got your books about Diane Crump, the one called The Greatest Racehorse? ? About Man of War, and then The Great Sweepstakes of 1877. You are a wealth of knowledge, and thank you for doing all this research so the rest of us can just enjoy it. I just bought the book on Amazon, and I want to thank you so much for coming on. This is so fascinating, and good luck on everything. I'm so excited to see what's coming next.
Well, thank you for having me, and anytime you want me, I'm there for you.
Sick of fly sprays that smell terrible, don't work, and are full of toxic ingredients? Try Bye Bye Insects from Spalding Labs. Their science-backed botanical fly spray is effective, smells great, and is formulated for horses and people. Switch to a fly spray you can feel good about and keep the bugs at bay. Learn more at spalding-labs.com.
Well, Jamie, it is that time of the year. That time of the year when Richard joins us. He's one of our terrific auditors and puts together the HRN Virtual Tevis Team. That's right. It's time for the Tevis Team. Hey, Richard, thanks for doing it again this year.
Oh, no problem. Always enjoy doing that.
Now, this started...
I mean, you're champions right now, so you got to come back
right.
on.
We won last year, right?
Defend your title.
Yep, we won by, I think, 110 miles.
And we beat that, you know, that team nobody knows about. Nobody knows her. Stacy Westfall something. I don't know. You know, we beat her team.
She sucks. Whatever.
So remind everybody what it is.
Okay. What the virtual Tevis is you ride 100 miles in 100 days. So basically, if you wanted to, you could get out and ride 1 mile a day. And we ride it starts April 23rd through August 2nd. And your time has to be finished by August 2nd because that's the day of the actual Tevis. So you've got that much time to get everything done.
And this was started during COVID as a something to do during COVID, right?
Yeah, since they weren't going to be able to do the Tevis during COVID, they decided to try this and see how it went.
And they've kept it going because, like, a lot of people signed up for this.
Well, a lot of the part of the money goes to help keep the Tevis Trail in shape and helps fund that.
How much does it cost to enter?
It was around $60-something, and that's for your entry fee. You get a T-shirt, and then you can keep your miles tracked on their website. And then for like $15 or $20 more, you can actually get a little medal, either a human-sized medal or a horse-sized medal now. So.
Oh, really? Okay. I didn't know that. And do you have to have, you don't even have to ride a horse, right? You can drive, you can walk, or not drive, you can drive a horse. You can walk or run or whatever, right?
Yeah, they've got two different divisions. They've got the equestrian division and then the non-equestrian division. But even in the equestrian division, if you get out and say your horse is slightly lame and you're needing to rehab it, you can still count the miles that you get out and walk your horse. Because if you think about it, on the actual Tevis race, you're not riding all 100 miles. Some of those miles you have to get off and walk your horse.
Mm-hmm. Okay, that makes sense. And I know that people did it last year that were in the non-horse division. So, it's something definitely to take a look at. So I'll put the link in the show notes of how to sign up. But we did well last year. I mean, do you remember what the total miles were? It was 20 people, right? 20?
Yeah, it was 20 people. But that was the one thing I didn't write down today was how many actual miles
it was a
we
lot.
Did.
Uh-huh. Yeah, it was a lot. It was more than the 100 per each. Some went over, I think.
Yeah.
And if I remember right, Stacy Westfall's team was bigger than ours, too.
Yeah, they were about twice the size of our group.
Well, we obviously used to work together, and I was just picking on her earlier, but she's going to have it out for us this year. she's going to be motivating her team because to lose to us would have made her mad. So.
Yep.
Yeah. We love her. I'm not picking on Stacy by any means. We used to do a show together.
I have a question. How do you track your miles?
I use Equilab, and I've got a Garmin watch that I use as a backup. But any type of tracking program that you can start when you start riding or start walking your horse, you can use that to keep track of your miles. And then I usually go in to, they've got a site where you go in, enter your miles. I usually do that as soon as I get finished that evening to make sure I keep up all my miles correct.
I use one, Jamie, called Ride with GPS. It's an app for your phone. And okay. It's pretty accurate. It does a good job. I don't know. I think it maybe cost, it didn't cost much. But Ride with GPS is the one I use. There's a bunch of them out there, right, Richard? I mean, there's a lot of different ones.
Yeah, there's a ton of different ones. And Equilab, they have a free version, which is what I use and works just fine.
There you go.
So then it's kind of on your honor as far as plugging the numbers in.
Yeah. Yeah, gotcha. It's all on an honor system. There's no prize for having ridden the most time or the most miles in the shortest time. So,
for the team that wins, or was it just a good job?
Yep, just a good job and gloating.
Gloating. Which we don't do. We don't gloat at all that we won last year. So, we're defending. How many do you have signed up already? It's only been open 2 days, but.
Yeah, we've already got 8 so far.
Yay.
And I need some more of the guys out there to join up because I'm the only guy right now.
Okay, yeah. All right, guys. Well, we know we have guy listeners. So, and they, if you're a guy that rides your bike, you can do that too. It just can't be a motorized thing. Like, I couldn't take my electric bike out. It can't be motorized or support. It just has to require some physical effort to do it. But yeah, if you pedal a rickshaw, whatever, you can sign up for this. Anyway, Richard, we appreciate you doing it. We appreciate you. I'll put all the links to the. We have a Facebook group just for the HRN Virtual Tevis team. And then I'll also put the link in to go where to directly to sign up. So, and is there a place on the sign up form where you actually indicate your team?
Yeah, when you're signing up, it'll ask you, do you want to sign up with a team? And so that's why I had to get up early Monday morning and get everything set up real quick. So everybody could start finding it because I had to go help a friend go over and set stuff up for Equine Affair on Monday.
So is it a drop-down menu kind of thing? They just pick our team, HRN Virtual Tevis?
Yeah, it'll ask you what the team name is. You type it in and it'll show up and you click on that.
All right, very good. Thanks, Richard. Good luck, everybody.
You're welcome.
You better win this year. Just saying.
Give Zoe a smooch.
Oh, I will.
The horse one.
That's right. It's time for This Day in Equine History. And on this day in 1866, Henry Berg founded the American Society for the Prevention of Cruelty to Animals, the ASPCA. He did it in New York City. Interesting.
1866, the ASPCA was started?
That shocked me, too. I was shocked about that. I thought it was much, I thought 1930s, maybe. But no, it was 66. I was shocked. The movement was inspired largely by the mistreatment of workhorses, which makes sense now that it was 1866 in New York, right?
So when Black Beauty was, that's why she wrote it. She was looking out her window.
Is there any reference in the world that doesn't come back to Black Beauty?
I can circle back to Black Beauty, like, no problem anytime.
I wish somebody from the beginning, I wish Rhonda, who has listened to every episode of this show, had counted the number of Black Beauty references. It'd be in the thousands by now. Berg was moved to act.
It's so pervasive, okay?
He was moved to act after witnessing a carriage driver beating a fallen horse in Russia. He apparently was visiting Russia and seen this. And today the horse remains a symbol of the organization's origin. So it was all about horses back then. Now it's turned to mostly dogs, I think. And
dogs,
and
horses. Yeah. No, there's a lot of horse stuff. And cats, everything. Animals.
On this day in 1939, the first ever intercollegiate rodeo was held at Godshall Ranch in Apple Valley, California. It marked the formal beginning of the competitive college rodeo, showcasing student skills in roping and riding, and they're still doing it today. All over the country, there are high school rodeo teams doing intercollegiate rodeo.
We didn't
rodeo.
Have that in Atlanta. That wasn't an option.
You probably have it at the school in Oklahoma.
Oh, yeah. This is a big deal here.
And I thought this weekend is the World Cup, so I thought I'd add this to the list and how because I didn't know when exactly the World Cup started. So it started as two separate events. It started in 1979 as the Jumping World Cup, and it was originally designed to mimic the success of Alpine Skiing World Cup. So our World Cup was taken after Alpine Skiing's World Cup, which is interesting.
Wait. The horses stuff was taken after skiing?
How it was set up and how it was done is how they designed the World Cup. Yep. The inaugural final was held in Sweden and was won by Hugo Simon from Austria riding his horse Gladstone. The historic first in 1982, Melanie Smith Taylor became the first woman to win the title riding her legendary horse. You know?
Calypso.
That's correct.
So Melanie Smith Taylor, of course, you can still hear her emceeing like all the things. Yes. She's always emceeing
show
jumping.
She's the best MC ever, I think. So the first dressage was held in 1986. I'm so used to the 1800s now. 1986, like 9 years later, and it was held in the Netherlands. It was won by Anne Jensen of Denmark on her iconic horse Marzog.
They were got that wrong.
What's that?
I would have got that wrong. I didn't know that one.
They were first combined together in 2005 in Las Vegas was the first time that they were put together. Rodrigo Pessoa, of course, holds the record for the most consecutive jumping wins, taking the title 3 years in a row from 98 to 2000 on the same stallion whose name I can't say.
Baloe de Ruet.
Thank you.
How about that?
Germany's...
I don't know if that's right. I just got to own it.
Guess who's won the most dressage... Like many, many, many times.
It's got to be Isabel.
Isabel Wirth won a dressage multiple times across three different decades. So there you go. That
My
was
first dressage saddle was the Wintec Isabel.
Oh, yes. We sold a lot of those when we had our store. So yeah, that's the little bit of history of the background of the FEI World Cup. Also started, I thought it was much more recent than 79 that started. I would have guessed late 80s to 90s, but what do I know? Apparently, we were wrong about all the dates today. So.
Mm-hmm. Well, I know the World Cup is happening in Dallas this weekend, and I have a dilemma. I don't know what to do. So I have tickets. Larissa and I are going to go down, and we're going to go down. And it's gotten shorter and shorter. So now it's because Chad's on call. I can't just leave Lucas and be like, see you, buddy. See you in 3 days. So I'm going to head down on Saturday morning and come back on Sunday because I have grandparents close by that I can take care of him or his grandparents. But the problem is they are expecting severe weather, like severe Saturday and Sunday here. So basically the severe weather usually stretches all the way down to Dallas on I-35, which is the freeway it would take to get down there. And then I'll be driving back up in the severe weather. So that is a detractor. And then unfortunately, I have to have Ginger take care of the farm. And I'll be like, I'm going to leave while there's tornadoes happening all weekend. And you got this. Well, I can't do that. So I'm freaking out.
In a place where you can say, well, you know, they're calling for tornadoes, but we're not going to get any.
We're not going to get any, baby. It's going to be fine.
Because you get like 12 around your house each season. So, yeah,
it's
you can't.
Not,
that would be
not,
like
yeah.
us telling Brooke, hey, we're going away for a week. And, oh, the hurricane's going to hit on Monday. You know, good luck with our horses.
And the thing is, like, and so Larissa called me yesterday. I was like, I don't know if I can leave. I can't. That'd be like super rude of me because her husband takes care of the farm. She's just like, I'll leave him. I don't care. So, but she was like, do you think it's okay if I just like go without you? And I was like, absolutely not. It's, the two of us are nothing. No, I was like, of course you should go. I don't have a husband who's going to sit here and take care of the horses. It would be bad. He would just let them all out.
Nor would Jennifer want me to sit and take care of the horses during a storm.
Exactly.
All right, let's do this next.
It's time for the weekly look at your equestrian first world problems.
That is not it. Good. That is not the right bumper.
I was going to say, this doesn't sound familiar.
Okay, normally I would cut that out because, you know, the show's professional
like
and everything.
Up.
But... Seeing we're not professional today, we'll just do this.
Time to learn why some days you're embarrassed to be part of the human race in Jamie's Weird News.
Well, it's not my weird news. It's our weird news. That's right. Because you find these stories and send them to me. If you were ever looking through the news and you see something and you're like, oh my God, that's so weird. I want to see it. Email it to weirdnews@horseradionetwork.com. Just like Laureen, Kathleen, Janelle, Debbie, Charlotte, Beth, and Jenny all did. So first, Glenn, I know you're a Disney fan. Okay. Have you ever been to Disney World in Tokyo?
No, I wish. We haven't been outside the United States. We've been to both here, not outside. We want to, but it costs a lot of money.
Okay, it's a story. I'm going to tell you what happened, but the amount of puns in this story, it's like painful. It's painful. We're going to start with the fact that basically there's like a... In the Disney World park, there's, you know, the tower up above and Rapunzel is up top in the tower and she's like greeting people as they come in. Well, this is all on video. Apparently, it's nesting season for crows.
Oh, no.
And they help themselves to plucking out her hair, like attacking Rapunzel's head.
Was it a real Rapunzel or a fake Rapunzel?
It's a fake Rapunzel. Oh, good. It's like an animatronic Rapunzel. And she's like looking back and forth and her head's moving and she's looking back and waving to everybody and smiling as she's getting mauled by crows.
That is like something right out of a Disney movie.
It is. And she's just like, hi, everybody. Welcome to Disney World. And it's like she's getting like voraciously attacked by crows. So... it's funny enough. That's the weirdness. Let me just give you like...
Oh, I'm sorry. I thought you were done.
I was going to give you a couple of the puns.
Okay.
Okay. First line is, it was a hairy tail ending. A video of birds tearing out her hair scared up 7 million views. Let's see. She was a lusciously locked animatronic singing Rapunzel while staring out her window. And then the crows ripped out her golden mane like out of the horror film The Birds. She was oblivious to her ravenous barbers. Let's see. There's so many. I'm going through. TikTokers remarked, help, they think it's a nest. I thought the birds were animatronic too. Rapunzel, Rapunzel, let the crows have your hair. She's definitely tangled now.
Oh, okay, gotta end on that one. That was perfect. That's the best one.
Oh my God, there's like 400 more. It just keeps going. That's the best one. Article. It's painful. I was going to make you guys suffer like I had to suffer because one of you guys sent me that story. Okay. Next, we're going to go to, this is like not a weird story. It's kind of a sad story, but then a happy story, but kind of weird. There's a woman in Michigan who has been playing the Lotto 47 twice a week since it started. Could be like almost 30 years. This woman has been playing the Lotto 47 twice a week. For 20 years, that's 52 weeks a year. So double that's 104. And then you do that times 20. It's like 20,000. I don't know. That's like 20 grand. Well, she finally won at 65 years old. She won $1.1 million in the lottery. Finally, she got a phone call. She's been buying it at the same supermarket, Bisson Supermarket on South Huron Road. And she got a phone call from a friend like, oh my God, you're not going to believe it. Somebody that got the winning ticket bought it at Bisson's. And she's like, oh my God, congratulations. She said it never crossed her mind that it could be me. So it turns out like after the show, she was watching TV and she's like, after my show ended, or after her stories ended, I checked my ticket and went absolutely crazy when I found out I was the winner. I called all my family to tell the big news. I feel like I can breathe again. Why? Because you're $20,000 in debt. You buy stupid lottery tickets for 20, 30 years. Good Lord. Okay.
You listen.
Don't question my math, people.
You listen.
Just let it go.
To too much of a certain financial podcaster.
Dave Ramsey would be pissed. It's funny that I am like such an anal person about listening to that and making sure finances are good. And I'm like, buy it. You're marching towards death. Yeah. Buy it.
Yeah. There's these horses for sale. I'm just going to fly there. I don't think he'd approve of that either.
Go for it. You know what? Dave Ramsey has talked about women with horses. Somebody called and said, oh, I don't know what to do. My wife, she's got a horse. And he was like, there's nothing you can do. He said that. There's nothing you can do about that. I love it. Okay. Finally, let's see here. We're going to go to Denver because the Denver Commerce City Police Department had some openings for jobs. And so this gentleman, I don't think they gave him his name. He applied for the job. And so he sent in his application. And so obviously, if you're going to apply at a police department, they're going to run a background check. He had multiple warrants out for his name. And he goes and applies at the police department. So what happens? The police department was like smart. They were like, he's got multiple warrants. They said he was a career criminal. Okay, career criminal. Oh, I don't know why he was thinking he could get a job, but the agency called him back, the police department, and they said, we would love for you to come in. We want to chat about your application. And he was like, yay, and we'll get the job. And he shows up and they're like, boom, you're arrested. And they took him to jail. Apparently, while he was escorted down to be booked, he did have a question. He said, "Is this going to negatively affect me getting hard?" Love it. Does this mean I didn't get the job? Okay.
He'd be good undercover.
Now, this is the one that I'm just going to remind you. This is why we have weird news. This is why. Glenn, what state are we going to right now?
Florida.
We're going to head to Florida, and we're going to talk to the Florida, it's Fort Lauderdale TSA agents at the Fort Lauderdale Hollywood International Airport.
Yeah, flown out of there. Yep.
Bless his heart. You did not fly out of there like this guy. Usually I read these and I summarize them and try to like paint a picture for you. I'm going to have to just read it almost as written because it's so stupid. Okay. They detained a 63-year-old Pompano Beach man Tuesday after he went through the full body scanner at the airport. And they were like, they listed him as having he had a layered situation going on across his torso, arms, and upper thighs. And they're like, what is all that weird stuff on his body? So they pull him over and, you know, they're like, hey, we're going to have to search you. And he puts his arm up and they go to frisk him. And they're like, what is that? He's got something duct taped to his body, arms, torso, thighs. Glenn, what do you think Eugene Plotz, 63 years old, had duct taped to his entire body?
It can't be drugs because that's too ordinary. Don't tell me it was alligators.
TSA agents counted 47 hot dogs across.
Why?
47 hot dogs taped to his body. They said it, they described it in the report as almost architectural because he had such.
Were they in the buns? Did it say if the buns and the, you know,
no
ketchup
buns,
and mustard?
Just hot dogs.
No.
Uncooked hot dogs. They said that this is the most organized sneaking something through TSA they've ever seen. And then when they ask him,
why
do you have 47 hot dogs? He said, I'm going to a cookout in Cincinnati and I wanted to bring hot dogs, but it costs too much to check a bag.
They sell hot dogs there.
In Cincinnati. Yeah. They searched his carry-on bag and it revealed a pack of buns, travel-size mustard, and plastic forks.
He really was going.
He was taking hot dogs. Unfortunately, they were not in any approved food container, had no ice, and had been taped to a human body for an undisclosed number of hours prior to the airport. They called his family in Cincinnati. They were like, what's happening? And they were like, yeah, we have a cookout. They said, we had no idea he was going to bring the hot dogs. So then the hot dogs were confiscated. They're like, sir, you got to give us these hot dogs. By the way, his mugshot looks like Doc Brown if Doc Brown had only hair on the sides, you know, okay. Just the party on the sides. So the hot dogs were confiscated. And you know what he did as they were escorting him out? He said, hey, can I get that tape back? I want that tape.
Can you? The only thing I could think of being a man is duct tape sticky and it rip every hair out of your body.
Oh, my God. Maybe it was just taped to the hot dog. I don't know.
Okay, yeah, that one's weird. that's weird news. Right there.
We're going to end on that one.
If people keep wanting to move to Florida, I don't know.
Got to take them hot dogs to Cincinnati.
All right.
Oh, by the way, he said when they said, why were you taping hot dogs to your body? He said he was, quote, just being efficient.
All right, there's no show tomorrow, and then we'll be back, or actually Ashley will be back with three shows for you on the weekend. Enjoy that. Jamie and I'll be back on Monday.
Wow, that's really sad that when they think of us for the next couple of days, all they're going to remember is hot dogs taped to an old man's body.
That's correct.
Great. Oh, thank you. Wrong song. Look, wrong button.
Why? I am here's hitting the wrong things today. All day today.
What's all right, everybody. Spay, neuter, geld.
There you go.
There it is.
Hold on, auditors.